social media comment sections.
Mechanics.
I'm too hysterical.
This is a real classic, but women's clothing having no pockets ever.
Good one.
Yeah.
No pockets.
Yeah. Oh, my dress that I'm wearing now has no pockets.
Yeah.
And this is why we can't have nice things.
Were we all supposed to join in there?
No.
Oh. I was imagining that. 1, 2, 3. This is why we can't have nice things.
Well done, everyone. Welcome to our first episode of This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things, also potentially known as This Is Why We Choose the Bear Every Single Time. Let us go around in a circle and introduce each other. I will start with myself. My name is Mira. I hate the smell of roses and love the smell of pepper. And given the choice, I would rather go to a show, meaning like theatre or stand-up, rather than go to a gig. I mean, it depends on the gig, but if it's like random band versus random stand-up, I'd probably choose the stand-up. Hmm. So yeah, that was me. And next we have Emma.
Hi, I'm Emma.
Hello, Emma. Can you tell us, if you had to eat one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Potatoes.
Potatoes.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Potatoes. Just a potato.
Just a potato.
I love that answer more than you can imagine.
No hesitation. No hesitation.
I love that. Also, are you a grass or a bench person if you're in a park?
Grass.
Grass. Nice. Just a bit of grass with some potato.
Yeah, grass and potato. Happy, happy vegan.
Are you just like a hobbit?
Yes. Just like me. Yeah. Hobbit goblin. Walk a bit of grass.
I'm just going to keep on going clockwise. Next, we have...
Francesca, nice to meet you.
Nice to see you here, Francesca. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you to the audience.
Yeah, we have. Yeah. We do know each other. Are you a salt or a sugar person?
Oh, salt.
Salt. Yeah. Nice. And if you could recommend... If you had a universal book that you could recommend to people, do you have like a go-to choice?
Not at the moment. I have different books at different times.
Okay, what was maybe the last book that you read?
Oh, well, BFFs, that was recommended by Erin. And unfortunately, I never remember the name of the author. Anahit Behrous.
Behrous, yeah.
Right.
Anahit Behrous. Yeah. And the subtitle of BFFs, which is very portentous. Is that a word? I'm going to use that anyway. I don't care. To our chat today was the power of radical female friendship.
The radical power of female friendship. And I think actually we were talking about doing an episode framed on that subject as well.
We did, Stay tuned. And then we're going to end with Erin. Please tell us, if you could pick from only having piercings or tattoos, what would you pick?
Oh, tattoos.
Tattoos.
Because I've sort of got rid of most of my piercings.
That's shocking.
Did you notice?
I mean,
I... Unless you're just like looking at my face properly
for the
first time.
There's still holes in your face, so I'm just gonna... I don't know. And what is the spookiest film for you?
Ooh! That's a good question. The specifically spookiest, not like scariest, like
You could pick scary if you're struggling for spooky, but
okay, the spookiest film. So there's this movie called Lake Mungo that is just like a relatively cheap, I think it's Australian or something, like movie. Very like mid-rated, as most horror movies are. It's probably like fucking like 5.1 on IMDb or something. It's one of those movies like nobody cares about, but for some reason I find it absolutely terrifying. The Fourth Kind is a bit like that as well. I was recommending that to you recently, Emma.
I do love The Fourth
Kind.
And
to me it's like horrifying, and other people watch it and they're like, what is this crap?
You know there was a discussion on Joe Rogan about The Fourth Kind where it wasn't Joe Rogan, but the guy who was on Joe Rogan was like, there's this documentary about aliens, and I think it was like actually in that scene Joe Rogan was like, I don't think that's true, mate.
Surprising.
Yeah.
Surprising.
Okay, so
how long did we make it into this before we started like talking shit about a man? I mean, record time.
Don't over anything.
We're gonna have to try and beat it in future.
We are gathered here today because actually we gather quite frequently, to be honest, to just discuss the plights of life as a woman. And I think this was born, I think from my memory at least, of us being shocked at how many common things there were that happened to us but we don't talk about. And we go through life being like, I thought that only happened to me. And I was like, no, that happens to all of us. And we like just gathered to discuss things like that over wine. And then we thought, if this is happening to us and we're so different and we're from different parts of the world, then maybe other women have that. So let's just do a podcast because that will be fun and everyone seems to be doing it. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we have people from different backgrounds that can contribute to this. We've got a bunch of therapists in our midst.
Yeah, so this is actually a predominantly therapeutic group.
Yeah.
Three or four of us are therapists, so mm-hmm. inevitably there's probably going to be some of that kind of lens on some of what we discuss, kind of implications for, you know, therapeutic practice and commentary on... the kind of how these kind of issues pertain to, you know, therapeutic relationships or the type of work that we might do with people, I suppose. Yeah, I don't know. You guys have any further thoughts about that? Or?
I guess one thing I would add, I've got a background in advocacy as well. So, like, speaking up on behalf of people, like, I guess that's something I have witnessed throughout my therapeutic advocacy life of women in general not being able to kind of like not feeling able to speak up for themselves, that other people are speaking for them. So hoping to give my lines on that.
Yeah, totally. And I think as well, like some of the conversations me and Francesca mm-hmm. have had have just been of a broader sort of nature of just noticing that I don't know, like there's I guess kind of the culture of how information is kind of distilled and kind of oversimplified on social media can kind of feel like like some of the nuance around for example like feminist ideas is sort of lost a little bit, so
mm-hmm. What a wonderful segue into our main topic.
Oh my god.
Well done, Eric.
Wow.
Well done.
That was totally intentional.
I'll bet it was. Yeah, I think the thing that we were trying to focus on today, as Erin very beautifully segued us into, was online discourse. And the prototype that we're going to use for the discourse today is going to be the new album cover for Sabrina Carpenter's Man's Best Friend.
And when we say new, is this album actually out?
The album is not out yet. The album is going to be out on August 29th. Mm. So the discourse is still ongoing, and there's a lot of guesses as to what the potential interpretations of the cover are going to be. Are there going to be more layers to this? Is this just what it's going to seem like? And yeah, rather than it just being at least... from my end, I don't mean this to be a discussion about Sabrina Carpenter because I don't think that I've listened to her enough to defend or accuse her of anything. It was what I wanted to focus on was a discussion on the discussion mm-hmm. because it very quickly, the online discourse turned into opinions on what feminism is.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really good point to start, especially considering what we're the like main topic of what we wanted the podcast to be about. So, just as an introduction, I'm going to say what the cover is, what we're going to talk about for anyone that hasn't seen it. So, Sabrina Carpenter is dressed in a black dress. She's on all fours. There is a man who we can't properly see right next to her. And he's holding her hair. She's not skimpily dressed, I mean, the dress is pretty short, but it's not, like, too revealing. And the man is holding her hair and she's looking at the camera. And obviously the title of the album is Man's Best Friend, so we have the very clear implication that she's being treated as a dog. So that's where we are. That's our starting point.
Yeah. And it feels like the kind of, like, if we can kind of, like, sketch out what the online discourse has been, it's been like this real, or at least, well, this is my appraisal, a kind of polarization between kind of like two perspectives on what's mm-hmm. going on, yeah. Or what the intention of this picture is. Mm-hmm. Is it helpful for me to say more about that?
Yeah,
yeah. So it feels like there's kind of two camps. One of the camps is, no, this is satire, this is, like, constructive in that sense. It's sort of tongue-in-cheek, it's drawing attention to and making fun of patriarchal tropes and norms, and therefore it's progressive, and this is, you know, this is good feminist stuff that's happening here. And then the other camp is, or again, maybe a little bit of an oversimplification, but it feels like this kind of polarized, with the other camp saying, well, you know, how can we distinguish this from, you know, a kind of a patriarchal visual? What about this is satire? If it feels like it's just kind of reproducing misogynistic imagery would typically look like. And that feels like what the tension is. And it feels like there's also kind of implicit in that, I guess, kind of like the representing of kind of two kind of feminist positions that are often clashing and in conflict in lots of different kind of places, where there's a sort of like a, you know, kind of pro female sexuality, or, you know, pro, you know, liberating female sexuality, and then, you know, a viewpoint that's sort of taken as being sort of conservatively yeah. sexual and, mm-hmm. and sort of regressive in that sense. And I feel like that's the way that the dialogue has kind of fallen, and how the two camps are sort of treating each other.
Yeah. And I can give examples of both of those just to put everything into context. On the one camp, which I, from what I've seen at least, has been typically maybe slightly older generation, and by older I mean millennial, because I'm a millennial now and we're all old.
Oh my god.
So one of those is, women face horrific domestic abuse and degradation at the hands of men every single day worldwide, but she wants to profit off of imagery of herself being degraded, comparing herself to a dog. Pandering to men will never be feminist. I don't care if the lyrics say fuck men. And then on the other hand, we have the comment that for me started it all and made me vibrate in my seat, which was, maybe this is a bad take. Solid start. But I fear we have stopped doing things for the male, gazed ourselves back into expecting women to be modest and shaming them otherwise. And it's strange.
That is a strange. That was strange.
Yeah, that was very strange.
Those are some strange tempos. Yeah.
So, yeah. Basically saying that not over-sexualizing yourself is anti-feminist.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts?
I mean, I think it's fairly obvious where we're landing along the spectrum.
Yeah. But I wonder as well if sometimes it's a matter of, like, all of these comments and, you know, conversations around this are never about, like, how can we move forward?
Mm.
From sexualizing women, so women basically need to go into sexualization in order to make a living and mm-hmm. to be seen in society, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's what is it, the next step? Mm-hmm. And what I'm understanding is that conversation are always stopping before that. Mm-hmm. They're always stopping about, like, either way, accusing women or not doing the right thing.
Mm.
Yeah. There's something about it's been seen as, like, she has full control over this as well, full creative control over it, whereas we're forgetting, or some people are forgetting, that there's a patriarchal music industry funding this and kind of fueling this. So questions around how much input did she actually have on this, and how much was she kind of, like, no, coerced is the wrong word, but, like, asked to do this, like, oh, this would be a really good idea, this would be funny. Was this, was it, like, men behind this that actually kind of started it all.
So, and this brings me to, like, one of the other comments that I saw was Sabrina embracing her sexuality the same way Britney and Christina did in the early noughties and sending these new kids into a frenzy. That's how we know she got it. Do we want to bring Britney into this, knowing what we know about Britney and how much input she had?
Yeah. But that's the other thing, right? Like, it's about how much, actually, you know, controlling power really women have in any industry. Yeah. And then after a while, and I'm thinking about different, I don't know, experiences I had, you know, by being rejected and being said not to so many times, like the little level of control that you have about the little section of your life or your career, your profession, whatever, then of course it becomes like this big thing that everyone is going to celebrate and appreciate because we didn't have power throughout like the entire process. You know,
and especially something that you said about like how being told no shapes your tastes. So even people saying like, oh, well, she's like empowering herself because she's being sexy. Well, if you're raised in a way and in an environment where people tell you this is how we like you to act and this is how we don't like you to act, is it really, are you really enjoying yourself? Is it, are you really like feeling yourself, quote unquote, as is the like jargon of like, I'm feeling myself, like, are you? Or is this? And there's another, I don't have the actual quote to hand, but I was reading somewhere from like direct commentary from Sabrina Carpenter going like, well, I'm just, people tell me that they don't like it when I'm overly sexualized, but that's the content that I'm seeing people engage with the most. So what do you want from me? And it's like, well, that's kind of the point.
Which is very similar to conversations that you find on social media about like, I'm not sure like how you need to advertise and market yourself. People are always about going around in circles saying that you should actually do what the audience is asking you, asking of you to do, right? But considering that we live under patriarchy, then we all know what the audience is asking of you, off of you.
And I think actually like that this is kind of the heart of it, this thing about like, you know, individual women's agency under patriarchy and the degree of like responsibility for action. Because it does feel like that's kind of part of what's going on, that again, like kind of people who are speaking from a quote unquote feminist place are getting themselves so tangled and getting so frustrated with each other about, you know, like coming back to some of those tweets, it feels like what's going on is this kind of like up for debate question about actually whether this is her choice and in what sense is it her choice to produce content like this and to lean into what is allegedly satire of oppression, but which feels like just a depiction of oppression. And there's that camp that feels reticent to, you know, concede that a woman could choose to create content that perpetuates, you know, dynamics of oppression, because again, that little bit of control, that little bit of, you know, choice is so hard fought for. You know, we don't want to have to, you know, engage with or talk about how actually women's choices might still be patriarchal in nature, might still be contributing to systems of oppression. We're very resistant about having to engage with that. It feels like victim blaming.
Yeah, and then there's this thing as well that there's a tone of, well, let's say that she's choosing to do it. Let's say that, like, she's a kinky gal, I'm a kinky gal, like, high five, I got you. And she's just, like, exploring her kinks and that, like, that's a feminist thing to do. No, it's not. I mean, not everything that a woman does voluntarily is a feminist action. The ability to do something as a woman without being judged or like taken advantage of is what feminism fights for, but just because you did something as a woman, that doesn't make it like feminist.
Such a good point.
I don't know.
And there's something in what she's saying of, like, it's kind of like just pushing back on accountability, responsibility of, oh, well, Brittany and Christina have done it, so I can do it. Mm. So, well, why can't you do something different? Why can't you think about society as a whole rather than you and your one bubble of, like, it's okay for me to do it because I'm a privileged person, not thinking about the women that aren't in that privileged place.
And that is the place that I would put pressure on, you know, this idea, because I think that kind of mainstream liberal feminism does characterise itself as the end goal of feminism is making it such that women on an individual basis can, you know, have the liberty of making choices that they want to make. But I don't think that that necessarily is the end point for feminism. The end point for feminism is the liberation of all women, you know. And as individual women, we can, you know, have the freedom to make certain choices that ultimately perpetuate systems of oppression for other, you know, other groups of women. And that's why we do need a critical lens on women's choices, and we need to be able to do that, and it's not necessarily girl-on-girl hate, you know, or internalised misogyny.
Yeah.
It's like that. I think you used the term accountability. It's, you know, it's holding each other accountable, and to me that's what, you know, feminist solidarity should consist in, is that mutual accountability. I've been able to recognise, and recognise, you know, feminists have done a lot of wrong things in the past under the guise of feminism. There's been lots of atrocities. You know, feminist movements have colluded with, you know, conservative politics and, you know, have white supremacy, and that's happened. And if we can recognise that on that more societal, kind of broader scale, that it's appropriate to look back and put a critical lens and go, well, actually, where are those women, you know, who are fighting for their, you know, liberty or fighting for their choice or whatever? Can we recognise that wasn't maybe a fully feminist act?
Yeah.
We also need to be thinking about that in the present and in situations as, you know, apparently trivial as the kind of visuals that pop stars put out. Because I say it's trivial, but actually it's not trivial because it's the influence that it has on
on, like, very young girls.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I was thinking reading all of those comments, especially from, like, younger feminists in that tone of, why are you shaming her? It's not about shaming her. It's like, it was like you were saying, Erin, about how it doesn't have to be hate. It's just like, if she were my friend and she wanted to do a naked cover, and she's not even naked, by the way, but if she wanted to do, like, a naked cover, nobody's saying that she shouldn't do it. She's done it. More power to her. It's going to be a very successful album, I'm sure. But if my friend had done that, I would still have a moment of, like, hey, is everything all right? Like, are you sure this is what you want? You're very young. You're in a very exploitative environment. Mm. Like, all good in the hood.
Mm.
This is just, like, a temperature check. It doesn't have to be a hate. It's not like, oh, you fucked up and you've set us back years. It could just be like a, we've seen this happen to people before. Are you, like, blink twice kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the question is always, like, what's happening around you, right?
Yeah. Like, I don't know who's in your team. It could just be really cool people, but it could not be. And we've been complicit with that before, being like, yay, Britney is, like, liberating herself. And, you know, we'll know how that ended.
And there's something about the messaging, even just the title of the album, Man's Best Friend. So it's telling people, just be placid, be, like, just go along with what we're saying, like, go along with man and the patriarchy, like, if you look deeper into the message behind it. So it's like,
exactly,
even that in itself, it's like,
and that was my other thing. I was like, do you know what, again, fellow kinky gal here, I have no issue with her sexualizing herself. If she was naked, I would have less of a problem with this cover, because that would be sexy, and she could be like, I am feeling my sexuality, I'm owning my sexuality, I'm, like, I'm getting some kind of pleasure in this, because that's inherently at least on top of it, the point of sex. But she's fully clothed, one. Two, she's in a degrading position. The title of the album, the man who's holding her hair. The whole point of this isn't about sex, it's about subjugation. Mm-hmm. If you were being sexy, absolutely fine. But you're not, you're trying to make a point.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm concerned about the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it kind of feels like, I don't know about you guys, but there's the, and I think this is what's been going on, you know, on the internet as well. On the internet, I feel really, on the World Wide Web.
I am 65. Yeah.
But that's how I would talk.
Yeah, on the internet. But it does feel like there's this sort of like anticipation of like waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like there has been like some creators. That's what people call them, right?
Yeah.
Online, I think so. Content creators. There we
content
go.
Content creators, yeah. Influencers.
Yes. I know how young people talk. Content creators who have made content that's been exactly this sort of like conjecture of, oh, what's the punchline going to be? Mm-hmm. You know. So there is, I think, some a bit of suspicion around, is this deliberately stoking fires? Is this deliberately stoking mm-hmm. a controversial sort of, you know, dialogue in order to raise the profile
mm-hmm.
of yeah. the release so that people are, you know, really interested in that other shoe dropping? Is it going to be worse? Is it going to be really... Are we actually going to see something that's, you know... you know, feels like it's really misogynistic, and mm-hmm. Or are we going to get the pathos of like, oh, actually
it was her holding her own hair in a guy's suit.
Yeah, yeah. Which I think was, there was some content creator yeah. who did that, and I was like, oh, that would be hilarious.
Yeah.
I would still be pissed off.
Yeah,
because I would still be like, no, like, you know, like cultural, the kind of the politics of culture mm-hmm. isn't a place, you know, contentious culture that's interested in like, you know, social justice isn't a place to go and like whip up discontent in order mm-hmm. to promote your music. Don't like that. Mm-hmm. But I would still be happier if it turns out that this is a kind of tongue-in-cheek, I got you.
Yeah.
I got you. Yeah. Kind of moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But who knows?
It does look into that, the whole culture around rage baiting just mm-hmm. now of like, it comes back to living in a capitalist society about making as much money as we can to let's just even pretend we're doing these shit things just to get all these comments, just to get, like you said, all this kind of traffic through mm-hmm. to make as much money as we can, because we've only got a limited window of the amount of dollars, amount of pounds we can make kind of thing. So let's just go full throttle and just throw everything at it.
Yeah. I'm also, and this is actually like just occurring to me, but I'm drawing a parallel between, because I think it's the same statistically speaking demographic that is having an issue with this discourse, even that are like next generation feminists who are like, we should be allowed to be sexualized. She's just, again, quote unquote, feeling herself, stop being so freaked out about this. I'm pretty sure that it was the same people that had a massive hissy fit over Blake Lively promoting her hair care brand during her like movie promotion for a film about domestic violence. And they were like, how dare she? This is a movie about domestic violence. She's not dealing with the topic with the gravitas that we expect from something with domestic violence. She is a horrible person, how dare she? And I'm pretty sure that it's the same demographic that is now like, Sabrina Carpenter is just being a sexy beast and we love it. Mm-hmm. It's just like, maybe we need to...
Yeah, it does feel like it's a bit of that thing of, isn't it awfully convenient that people will get up and defend and promote the type of quote-unquote empowering like actions or choices that just happen to benefit them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, yeah. it's like that, you know, you see this with like kind of like lefty or like liberal men who are just very, very enthusiastic and quick to defend like the commercial sex industry mm-hmm. in the name of it being empowering. you know. And it's like, okay, what other feminist issues do you know about that you also think are wonderful? Oh, you haven't really thought about that before. Mm-hmm. I wonder why.
Interesting.
Yeah. I have personal experience of that with an ex. It was just interesting arguments and debates around that whole issue.
Same.
And just
high five.
Completely oblivious.
It's maybe like, worth like just doing like a quick plug of like in other episodes we are going to do like a section on like
axes.
Well, yeah. Some of our particular gripes with personal encounters with
By the way, do you want to guess the gender of the comments that I read that were very supportive of Sabrina Carpenter's sexual expression?
Oh, you have the data.
No idea.
Shocking.
Hard to tell.
Predominantly men. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Colour me shocked.
Surprise.
Yeah. Some of the defence, by the way, because somebody did point that out, I was like, funny that all of the men are like vigorously defending her right of self sexual expression. And somebody was like, well, a lot of them seem gay. I'm like, that's. What? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's also something that I can't remember who it was that said it, but like it's that I think you're talking about Blake Lively and promoting her film about domestic violence, but like the cover of that album that screams like gender-based violence, but it's, there's a continuum of it, so people are like just like, well, that's not really linked to that at all. Mm-hmm. They're kind of separating it. It's sexy, but it's like actually it's still linked to that in some way. It's maybe not on the most extreme side of it, but it's still. Yeah. Part of the continuum kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's the real normalised, sexualised side of the continuum. She looks compliant. She looks like she's into it.
Yeah.
I just love walking about on all fours and having men grab my hair. I just love that. It's just very sexy. Yeah.
Unrelated, I've had this, like, not pet peeve, but, like, what's the phrase for having an idea that just like your mind keeps circulating around because they keep hearing that thing of like sometimes about how you know that phrase where sometimes women say no but they mean yes.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Token resistance
sure
is the term for that. Token resistance.
I have never experienced this. And I don't know any woman that's ever said no but she's meant yes. But what I do think happens is sometimes women say yes, but they mean no, because you're taught to just be agreeable and to be compliant and to just be nice. And if you're not, you're like, why don't you have a sense of humor? Why are you being such a bitch? Why are you being so stuck up? Why are you being so difficult? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of like, I'm just being compliant to make this go away. The number of women that I know that have had sex, not because they wanted to, but because it was easier than having the argument.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it kind of, and it does link, I think, link back in the kind of broader picture to exactly what we're talking about from the perspective of like adaptive preferences, which is like a sort of theory in political philosophy where, it's this kind of like idea that, you know, we might have legitimate preferences for things, but those preferences have been formed under like, you know, particular conditions and particular environments, you know, so and adaptive preferences are not necessarily like a negative thing. So for example, you know, I might be someone who just doesn't have the skill set or a natural proclivity towards playing the cello, and therefore it's helpful for me to adapt my preferences to something other than being a concert, you know, a concert cellist. You know, that's a good thing that I've adapted those preferences because my conditions are such that that's not going to be an option for me. But adapted preferences also are, you know, it's you know, we can talk about that when we talk about situations like this. So, like, you know, there might be women who have a legitimate preference towards behaving in a certain way or making certain choices, and that might feel, you know, that might be experienced as like a legitimate preference of those of hers. But that preference is born out of like limiting conditions under patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what feels what we're talking about, you know, the legitimate condition, you know, those limiting conditions under patriarchy and how that might shape and limit women's preferences about things. So yeah, in the context of like Sabrina Carpenter, you know, the choice of saying yes and getting on board with, you know, the marketing and of her music and her personality as a musician and as a performer and the type of content that she puts out, those preferences, she might be quite, you know, within herself, quite eager to agree to that and to pursue that, but that doesn't mean that there's the conditions under which she's made those choices have been, there's been liberty within that. Yeah. It's like you were saying earlier, like being a woman, where you know that in order to get a certain type of success, you might have to get on board with certain things. So it makes sense for you to refine your preferences to that so that you feel fulfilled and it feels, you know, that feels like an option for you.
Yeah, what a shame though, for a woman, like, you know, with talent, that it needs to be like, you know, completely covered up by all of this noise about like sexualization and, you know, like people commenting on both sides of the spectrum of, you know, whatever, you know, ideology they lean on, you know. And actually we have like a singer. Yeah. Almost like he just wants to sing.
Yeah. And she has a really good voice and like can stand on her own two feet on stage. Absolutely fine. But
just not for album covers.
Yeah. It's hard.
Honey, we have a square ratio for the shoe. Can you get on your knees? Can't expand the camera. Sorry. And this is why, like, this was my thing. I felt like there was a reason why this cover had a lot of traction and controversy, but then she had another cover come out very soon afterwards for Rolling Stone magazine, where she was completely naked. And she's only wearing stockings. She's in profile. We can't really, like, see boobs or anything else exposed, but she is completely naked. That didn't get almost any traction because this is just... I mean, we can make the case for sexualization, but it doesn't carry a political message of domestic violence. It's not toying with...
It doesn't seem like she's being subordinated by anybody.
Yeah, she's on her own. Nobody's holding her hair. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
And I guess that's the thing as well. It's the issue is not being sexualized.
Yeah.
Really. Mm-hmm. You know, the issue is not putting out content of a sexual nature. Do sexual imagery, that's okay. The issue is the subordination implied. Sorry. It's not implied.
Yeah.
Being very, very explicitly depicted.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Which is the thing that sticks for me around the kind of accusation of like, oh, you're a prude and you're being conservative and you're co-opting these like kind of patriarchal, you know, kind of misogynistic ideas of like restricting women's sexuality. And it's like, no, I'm all for women having sexual liberty. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is representative of women's sexual liberty. This is representative of a woman being oppressed. I don't want her to be subordinated. I want you know, depictions of women's sexuality that feel like it's representative of you know, free choice and you know, kind of equitable relationships. Mm-hmm. This isn't an equitable relationship.
And there's something in that as well of when that is the case where they have free choice over it, the comments from men are all about, oh, you're a slut, you're this, you're that, and just really derogatory, really pulling them down. It's like, because it's not for them, it's not pleasing for them, they're doing it for their own, like, they're doing it free will, making a choice about it, not feeling subordinated, but it's, it's that. Yeah. I can't think of the word to put in there, but it's... Mm.
And before we get ourselves cancelled in our first episode for being too critical of young women, I think we're going to call it here, and I'm going to close this with a quote from our Queen Margaret Atwood that felt apt. Male fantasies. Is everything run by male fantasies? Up on a pedestal or down on your knees, it's all a male fantasy. That you're strong enough to take what they dish out, or else too weak to do anything about it. Even pretending you aren't catering to male fantasies is a male fantasy. Pretending you're unseen, pretending you have a life of your own, that you can wash your feet and comb your hair, unconscious of the ever-present watcher peering through the keyhole in your own head, if nowhere else. You're a woman with a man inside watching a woman. You're your own voyeur.
And now moving on to our next section, which I have lovingly called Who Said That Shit? Where I have gathered up a bunch of quotes from the internet that are dubious in nature at best. And we're going to have a multiple choice quiz with the other girls on Who Said That Shit? As I was saying to the girls, I am a little bit worried that Aaron's got an edge on this, but... I've just put you on the spot. This is my trick.
Can you extrapolate about why you feel like I have an edge?
Why? Because I feel like you're very well educated about horrible things that people say about women on the internet.
I do spend a lot of my time in horrible cesspools.
Yeah, you spend a lot of your time on footnotes.
I do.
So yeah. you have an edge on knowing what the source of each quote is.
I feel like you're gonna jinx me now, though.
I mean, that is basically my strategy for this, is just to give everyone else a chance. Okay, so are we ready to play Who Said That Shit?
Yes!
Cool. Quote number fun. If I were... Which...
That was fun.
Yeah. Which of the following men said this about their daughter?
I already know.
If I weren't happily married, you know, her father, I would be dating her.
Donald Trump.
Was it A, Jordan Peterson, B, Billy Ray Cyrus, the father of Miley Cyrus, C, Donald Trump, or D, Barack Obama?
Donald Trump. It's got to be Donald Trump.
So Donald Trump definitely said something with proximity to that, more or less. He basically said about Ivanka, like, I would, if I wasn't her dad, I would. So
it's disgusting.
The thing is, it's possible that some of the others did, but I know that Donald Trump definitely did.
Yeah, okay, I'm going for that too. Mm-hmm. Just because Erin says so.
I'm very confident.
And the correct answer is...
Miley Cyrus' dad.
Donald Trump.
I think that was a red herring, the way you looked when you said Billy Ray Cyrus. Yeah.
And one of the reasons that I wanted to include this was because I also wanted to include this bonus quote from the Seattle Times about other gross things that Trump said about his daughter. So the Seattle Times reported...
Did they make a whole article just on horrible things he said about his daughter?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Which is how you know that it's really bad. Aides said that he talked about Ivanka Trump's breasts, her backside, and what it might be to have sex with her, prompted former chief of staff John Kelly to remind the president that Ivanka was his daughter.
Oh, wow.
Nobody can see the face I'm making, but
the
face is melting.
Erin has put her fingers into her eyeballs, temporarily forgetting that she required this information through her ears.
Do you think this section should be like a trigger warning?
Probably, yeah. We should have put a trigger warning. But yeah, that was fun, wasn't it?
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Quote number two. Everyone knows men make the best women. Stronger, faster, more compassionate. There's just nothing a woman can do that a man can't do better.
Oh, wow.
Was this...
Chick.
A, Piers Morgan. B, Andrew Tate. C, Jordan Peterson. Or D, Kid Rock.
Oh, careful. It's between Andrew Tate and Kid Rock for me.
I'm going to say Andrew Tate.
No, Kid Rock. Sorry.
I mean, that's the thing. The reason I'm zoning in on, you know, because I'm sure all of them are equally terrible in their misogyny, but I feel like Andrew Tate and Kid Rock share the quality of also just being sort of like a little bit, like, unhinged. in their thoughts and the way they talk about things. Mm-hmm. And so... Yeah, I think I'm going to say Andrew Tate.
I think Andrew Tate.
The other one.
Kid Rock.
And the correct answer is... Jordan Peterson.
Whoa.
I'm feel like I'm the resident Jordan Peterson. Well,
I know.
I feel like we might share
the title
of the resident Jordan Peterson expert. But I'm surprised about that for Jordan Peterson, because usually Jordan Peterson is relatively good at covering his ass.
Yeah.
When it comes to the polemic, you know, like I feel like he's quite good at, I don't know, like.
So my
he covers his misogyny usually with the kind of like the misdirection of like academic kind of
therapeutic talk. I think Jordan Peterson trusts context a lot, and he feels comfortable giving his more polarizing opinions when he feels like the topic can like give him cover. Mm-hmm. So this quote was given in reference to trans athletes and female sports. And so he felt like, well, you know, people will have my back because this is about, like, quote-unquote defending women and their... Yeah.
That said, I also feel like there's an evolution going on with Jordan Peterson where, like... He's recognized, and we've kind of already talked about this with the Sabrina Carpenter stuff and the kind of like the industry strategy of like taking advantage of rage baiting, and I think there is a little bit of that with Jordan Peterson in some places now where he sort of is recognizing that he can kind of ride the financial wave of rage bait. Like there was some recent people talking about this in reference to his like participation in the Jubilee.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You know the Jubilee... Is that the name of the company, Jubilee? They do, like, these, like...
The discussion forums where it's, like, one person against...
Debates. Quote-unquote, for listeners doing ear quotes. There's absolutely nothing constructive in the debate. It's not a debate.
It's just rage bait.
But, yeah, like, he did one recently, and the whole thing was just... fuck are you saying, man? And it did feel like he was just like stoking fires for profit. But anyway, sorry, ramble.
No, it's fine. Good context. And also for this question, I was torn between using this quote and another quote, so I'm gonna give the other quote as a bonus from Piers Morgan. Don't chase women. They will chase you. They are like horses in a pasture. If you don't go drooling over her, she's gonna want to know why. Oh, Piers.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
What a silly, silly man.
I don't know about you guys, but I love being compared to animals. Yeah. I just love being dehumanized. And...
little chick.
It brings us right back to the Sabrina Carpenter album cover.
Yeah, there we are.
I like
horses instead of dogs. This thing.
I love being compared to animals as long as they're not dogs or horses. Like any animal that can, like, bite you or maul you or like kill you in some way.
Mm.
If I'm a little chick, I can peck you to death. I guess I will do my best.
Wow.
Okay, quote number 3. Women get more unhappy the more they try to liberate themselves.
I know several people who have this point of view. I know several people who have made comments on this as an idea.
Mm-hmm.
I know one of them is our BFF Jordan.
He's not one of the options on this one.
Wow.
Okay, my next guest will be Charlie Kirk.
I am going to give you options next. Okay,
sorry. I'm choosing from one of the options that Irene is giving.
Is it?
JD Vance as well said that shit.
A. Bridget Bardot. B. Phyllis Schlafly.
Okay, yeah.
For those who don't know, Phyllis Schlafly was a prominent anti-feminist, leader of the anti-feminist movement during the, what was it, 60s? I should have made a note on this. Sorry, audience.
Yeah, it was the... like one of the kind of like big kind of pieces of legislation that the feminist movement pushed for in the States, the Equal Rights Amendment.
Yeah. Phyllis Schlafly. Yeah.
She led the conservative women's.
Some of her other views included things like
women don't need equal pay because at the end of the day, they aim to get married and have their husband support them, in which case equal pay does not affect them. So this is an irrelevant issue.
Like her the view that her and her ilk were pushing was, you know, the Equal Rights Amendment is going to make our, like, the elements of, like, female identity that are, like, central to, like, being a woman are going to, like, make that, are going to make those qualities redundant. And we need to, like, safeguard our proper role as women.
Yeah.
And other, all that kind of bullshit, you know.
So that was choice number two. C, Elon Musk. Or D, some guy on the internet. Here again, the quote, for those who forgot, women get more unhappy the more they try to liberate themselves. The options are Bridget Bardot, Phyllis Schlafly, Elon Musk, or some guy on the internet.
To be fair, like, option D could be any option, so any other things, you know, any other questions.
True.
Any one of these people could have said it.
Yeah.
I might go with Elon.
Good choice.
Phyllis.
I want to give a chance to people who hide behind a laptop and a screen.
Choice number D?
Yes.
The correct answer is Bridget Bardot.
Disappointing. I know. Hope it was some random.
No, no, no. She fully stands behind her opinion that women are just sexy and telling them to not be sexy. It's the whole Sabrina Carpenter thing.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah, so good stuff. Okay, quote number four. People who can't defend themselves physically, women and low testosterone men, parse information through a consensus filter as a safety mechanism. This is why a republic of high-status males is best for decision-making.
Sounds okay. Very... sounds like Pearson bullshit.
Yeah, leaving a moment for group size.
Sorry.
Was this...
What a holding my head in my hand right now.
Yeah. Was this A, Stephen Miller, also known as the guy that's behind all of the Nazi bullshit and ICE in the States right now? Was it B, Ben Shapiro, of internet douchebag fame?
It sounds a bit well written, Ben Shapiro. I don't think he knows that many big words.
Ouch. C, was it Alex Jones of The Waters Making the Frogs Gay?
Definitely not, because those are too many big words for Alex Jones.
Or was it D, some guy on the internet?
How many guys on the internet? How many keyboard jockeys on the internet know that many big words? Not I guess they could use ChatGPT to write.
Yeah. Okay, guy on the internet for me. Guy on the internet plus ChatGPT. I think it should become like...
Yeah. What was option A again?
Option A was Stephen Miller, Nazi wannabe in the White House, responsible of deportations currently. Ben Shapiro, Alex Jones, some guy on the internet.
I'll go for A because he'll probably get someone else to help write it for him.
I was going
to
say...
He is quite smart.
Can we ask about more context about where, like, is this something that's been said verbatim in an interview, or is this in text? Is this textual?
This is text. This was a post on, and I have edited it because it was quite long. It was on X.
Yeah, I'm gonna go for the politician.
The Stephen Miller. Okay, so we've got Stephen Miller.
Guy on the internet plus ChatGPT.
Guy on the internet plus ChatGPT.
Stephen Miller.
Okay. You will be happy to know there's a winner in this round. One of you got it right.
Tell me it's me.
It is you.
Woohoo!
Some guy on the internet. Handle autism cap. The reason why it came across my attention was because it was retweeted by Elon Musk with the comment, interesting stuff.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah.
I love how he really added a lot to the conversation.
I know.
When he said, interesting stuff.
I know, yeah.
I don't understand half these words.
So. Yeah. Yes, Elon, so is a weirdly shaped shit on the street, but I wouldn't scoop it up and start showing it to people if I were you. So, yeah, some guy on the internet. Well done.
Aren't they all just some guy on the internet, though?
True. Yeah.
Mm.
At the end of the day.
Yeah, they are. But that's the true.
And this is why we can't have nice things. Some guy on the internet.
Yeah.
And then the last quote, last and my favourite, I love this quote, is, if we're really being honest, never having a girlfriend, never having sex with a woman, really makes you more heterosexual because honestly, dating women is gay.
Andrew Tate?
The possible answers are...
Is Andrew Tate not on the list?
Are all options Andrew Tate?
Andrew Tate. Yeah, yeah. B, Nick Fuentes.
Oh, yeah, okay.
C,
it's Nick Fuentes.
Dan Bongino. Or D, Pontius Pilate. Of Jesus on the Cross fame.
Let's not count him out.
I mean, Nick Fuentes. Wow. Nick Fuentes.
I'm not sure who's Nick Fuentes.
Nick Fuentes. Fuentes. Some of Fuentes. Oh. Yes. Some of his other quotes include right after Trump was elected, going on the internet and saying, "Your body, my choice."
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah. So most likely that's the guy.
I think it's him. Mm. Okay, I'll go with him.
And the correct answer is Nick Fuentes.
Woohoo!
Of Your Body, My Choice fame. I'm getting mixed messages from you, Nick. Is it my body, your choice? Or do you think that having my body makes you gay? Do you want to be gay? Is this what this is about?
He does feel like one of those people where the things he says are so unhinged that it does go all the way around and feel like, no, this must be satirical. It must be.
You're
like the Ali G of weird alt-right misogyny.
Yeah.
Mm. You're actually like a very left-leaning guy, some like kind of gonna reveal yourself one day to
You're giving him a lot of credit of having that type of mind.
I know.
Maybe. But it's just, you know, when you see when the mental gymnastics are so feels like there's so much effort in them. It feels like the only sensible explanation is this is like scripted.
And we have an honorary quote that I'm not going to make you guess because it's from a random person. Well, he's not random, he is in power, he is a lawmaker in the States, a congressman I believe currently, Todd Atkin. The quote is, if it is a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to try and shut that whole thing down. Meaning you cannot get pregnant from rape. According to Todd Atkin, a man.
Oh, wow.
That is, by the looks of it, not really had sex much. And this is why we can't have nice things.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you everyone for tuning in. And we'll see you in the comments and thank you for your opinions.
Thank you.
Round of applause.
I feel like there's something to be said of like, this is our first one and we don't really know what the outro is going to be. So maybe there'll be other stuff after this.
Yeah.
Maybe there'll be a fancy little tune or a jingle or something. Who knows?
Jingle?
Yeah, that was maybe going to be like a little...
Stay tuned, audience. Maybe it's going to happen like in episode 10. Who knows?
Yeah.